Lord Byron's Last Command by Roland Morgan, with John Rye as Sir John Hobhouse and Elizabeth Morgan as Annabella, Lady Noel Byron.
Oh, c'est magnifique. Only 1 week I am in London, and already I see the widow of Lord Byron riding home from Rotten Row.
She lives here, in Grosvenor Square. She was separated from Baron, évidemment. He was a romantic poet, and she preferred mathematics.
Honey, you prefer his sister.
Frog is by the looks of all that lace, milady. Oh, ignore them, Dora. Only the ignorant still point and stare. There's no scandal in the name of Byron anymore. Society honors his lordship's heroic sacrifice of the cause of Greek independence. Little Ada will grow up the heiress of a military martyr, a general with his statue in Westminster Abbey. Once the archbishop can be persuaded to see reason. Heiress to a poet too, milady. Child Harold, the Corsair, Manfred, Dungeon.
Oh, really, Dora. Those silly rhymes were never more than extravagant fancies for empty-headed provincial girls.
She walks in beauty, like the night of cloudless climes and stars.
I let you ride with me. I teach you to read. And instead of discussing the rights of women, you're reciting whimsical verses.
Why, look, Sir John's carriage is outside your house, milady. He's strangely early for tea. Could it mean another proposal, ma'am?
You are incurable, Dora. John Hobhouse knows it's no use proposing anything to me until we've persuaded the church to mount Lord Byron's bust in the Abbey. And there's Mr. Bowdler's revised edition of the memoirs to bring to press. In any case, although I have been a solitary widow for these 2 years, it's no use pretending that my first attempt at marriage brought me any kind of bliss.
Oh, milady, I never meant to suggest. You've told me of the Auras.
Yes, well, never mind. Never mind. That's all behind me now. John Hobhouse is a good man. Demanding, but as I have taught you, a little South Sea sponge soaked in vinegar gives a woman wondrous peace of mind.
You're radiant, milady.
Oh, I have never felt so free of my black past as I do today. People have forgotten my disgrace. Hobhouse will sit in cabinet once the reform bill goes through. Oh, Dora, I'm starting a new life.
Good afternoon, Hatcher.
Welcome home, your ladyship. I'll have the horses seen to. Sir John attends your pleasure in the library.
Thank you, Hatcher. Sir John's early for tea. Have you warned Mrs. Hatcher?
Sir John refused tea, my lady. He ordered brandy.
What, at this hour? A sensible measure, I trust.
He kept the decanter and a large snifter, milady. He seemed a good deal put out.
This is how I must appear forever. Radiant, composed, and mistress of my destiny. John, darling. Oh, how lovely to see you. So unexpectedly early.
Down, Nessie. This letter was delivered to me at the House of Commons. Your nemesis claims to have rolled back the stone. Is the hand familiar?
You dally with my so-called widow and her fortune. Deduct £100,000 in repayment of my Greek campaign, lest I return. Lest I return?
Read on.
Deliver gold in person to the Bishop of Lima, who fights with us for liberty. Should you doubt this, remember it was a rash thing to dally with that Turkish maid. Recognize my hand and seal. Byron! Oh, Hobhouse! Is this some appalling prank?
Now, Bella, calm yourself.
Byron cannot address us from the grave in his own handwriting. He's buried in the churchyard at Hucknall Torkard. The body was disemboweled and quartered for shipment. The cranium trepanned. I had to view the remains.
So did I.
Well?
It was hard to identify him with absolute certainty.
Are you seriously suggesting? Oh, it's unbelievable. I cannot believe it. Oh, no, even a vile beast like Byron cannot rise from the dead to torment me. Oh, it's not enough for the putrid remains to scrawl an insulting message. He has the gall to blackmail me for half my cash. Oh, my head's spinning. Oh, I think I'm going to faint. Support me, Hobhouse.
Of course, dearest. Here, I'll loosen your bodice.
Stop mauling me there, man. It's hardly the time.
Oh, your deathly pallor's inspiring. Here, take a sip of cognac.
Oh, hold me. My skin is crawling. A romantic poet's corpse is limping about England. Perhaps even now he's at the window. The stitch is bulging round his brain. Candles, quickly.
It is broad daylight. Calm yourself. I'll get to the bottom of this, I swear. Have more brandy.
No, nothing will cure me now.
This thing is forged, of course. There's not one shred of doubt about it. I'm convinced of it. Yes, a forgery. Clearly, obviously, definitely.
I don't believe you, John.
Your eyes are wriggling.
Are they? I'd throw this tripe into the fire if it weren't for this puerile remark about a Turkish maid.
What does it mean? Is it some kind of code? I could analyze it mathematically.
It's just that I did have an acquaintance with a young Turkish lady, an heiress, of course, and I caught something most unpleasant. Laid me up in Piraeus for ages. A rash. Most embarrassing. Never breathed a word of it. Only Byron knew.
Only Byron? Do you mean to say that Byron did write this abominable letter?
Of course not. But how did someone dig up me rash?
From the memoirs?
Bowdler. Maybe he uncovered some reference while he was doing his hatchet job.
Ah, would it be in the index? I have the Bowdlerized Byron manuscript. It's there on the piano.
Ah. Oh, yes, yes. Here's the index by Cracky. Now, let's see. Here it is. Meals, meat, meetings, mistresses, mistresses, mistresses. Good heavens, 3 pages of them. Nothing under measles. Nothing under rashes. Oh, drat. Shall I just bung this rubbish on the fire, Bella? And what about the notebooks? Is this the pile?
Someone might have mentioned your episode. Byron was always drinking.
No, it's too trivial for that.
Then he's alive.
We must burn the Byron papers, Bowdler's rubbish,
everything. Burn them? There were thousands.
To whom, Bella? To whom? Can you imagine what a morally impeccable version of the memoirs could do for a reborn Lord Byron? A copy in every English household, a triumphant landing at Shoreham, the Luddites flocking to his standard?
I have a livid pain behind my eyes.
Lie down on the chaise lounge, darling, and I'll just dump these things in the fire. There! Bang goes his reputation anyway. Oh, you are so marvellously pale and weak and helpless.
Where is Lima?
Peru. Yet your heart is bounding like a bird's under my hand.
Oh, hold me, John. Where is Peru?
South America. Father General Bolivar's new empire. Oh, you're pale all over.
I was a happy child, John, although they made fun of me, broke my parallelograms, trampled on my protractors.
I'll raise your spirits.
You are raising my skirts.
My love.
My sponge. Oh, I'm so afraid.
Surrender. I'm master of the situation. I always was. Yes, Byron. I was master of the Greek affair. And I negotiated the biggest folly known in British history to distract the Turk from our business in Egypt. It was I who convinced the Greek committee that you should lead the revolutionary force at Thessaloniki. Byron, not you. You were festering Ravenna with some whore and her decrepit husband. I won the Great War in Whitehall with my tongue, the one you tried so often to tie. All you had to do was to mount one decent campaign against the Panto, and the Turk could have fallen back with a losing face. Oh, the Sultan had agreed. I handed you glory on a silver tray. You chose ignominy, Byron, a pathetic, feeling martyrdom. You will not be returning. You are dead and gone, Byron. See how I plough your widowed land.
Oh, my sponge! My sponge! Oh!
here, milady, from St. James's Palace.
What? The king's men at my door now, and I with my skirts about my ears. Oh, carry me to Bedlam, John. I am ruined twice in one lifetime.
Never. Arrange a gown and brazen it out, girl. The flush on your cheeks could be from Rotten Row. They'll be none the wiser. Put on a haughty front and fob them off. Watch me.
They're in the parlour, Sir John. Uniformed.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Forgive the intrusion, madam. Sir Arthur Delavere, equerry to His Majesty. These are my adjutants.
Come.
To what do I owe this honour?
Affairs of state, madam. Indeed, I'm happy to recognise Sir John in your company. We are investigating the death of Lord Byron.
Byron? Barely knew the fella. Funny little lame chap, wasn't he? Bit on the podgy side, very keen on pugilism.
Barely knew him, Sir John. A Mediterranean tour together in youth, close association in London, collaboration on the Greek insurrection. Appointed his executor. You are his executor, are you not?
Yes, I must say I am. I deferred to his widow's entreaties. She invoked my high position in political affairs, the considerable influence among the gentlemen of Whitehall. I felt bound...
Madam, please brace yourself for disturbing news.
What?
There are reports of revolutionaries being trained in Peru, paid for with Inca gold in preparation for hurling a Jacobin revolt at the British throne.
And?
Their leader is reported to be a certain Captain Manfred. They believe him to be a poetical hero in disguise. His true identity is claimed to be Lord Byron.
Does romantic poetry now claim immortality for its practitioner, Sir Arthur? Or had it escaped the notice of the British Crown that Lord Byron died a heroic death in the cause of liberty at Missolonghi in 1824?
These are grave charges, Delavere.
Aye, Sir John. It seems Byron could not content himself with slandering the monarch from his rebel lair in Italy. The Greek campaign, combined with, forgive me, madam, the congenital madness in his family, has apparently filled his head with dreams of usurping the throne and installing himself as tinpot emperor of some half-baked republic they propose to christen Albion.
Expect nothing of us, sir. We are powerless to help you.
Lady Byron is a little overcome with the speed of your intelligence, my dear Delavere. That is, the gravity of your tidings. She's stunned. Of course, we will collaborate in any way.
You're crushing my arm. Sir Arthur, I buried my estranged husband 2 years ago after identifying his remains.
If that is so, then evidence can be obtained to prove it, madam. I suggest that it is in your interest as much as His Majesty's to establish your husband's moribundity. Is that not so?
Certainly.
Yes, indeed.
Then I have this proposition. My intelligence officers have drawn up a list of his lordship's entourage at Missolonghi for Easter 1824. It would prevent suspicion if you were to conduct discreet inquiries among them about the circumstances of his lordship's death.
Upon what pretext, Delavere?
Well, a large estate tends to breed speculators like vermin, Sir John. You need only suggest that some knave is trying to lay hands on the fortune. Is something of the sort already going on?
How dare you suggest
that? There has been a blackmail note, Sir Arthur.
Ah. I'll have this examined.
And your list?
Ah, yes. Here is a copy.
May I see it, brother? Yeah. Dr. Millingen, Dr. Bruno, Colonel Stanhope, Edward Trelawney, Thomas Fletcher, Legazambelli...
A defrocked priest, a superannuated footman, a barber sawbones, and a self-proclaimed pirate captain. An odd general staff for a conquering hero. But see what you can get out of them, Sir John. Meanwhile, I will have this note inspected by the intelligence service. Is it a likeness of Lord Byron's hand?
It does bear a marked resemblance. Yes.
Well, this brings us a step closer, eh? Find out more about this, Sir John, and His Majesty could be rendered very happy. And he is most generous in gratitude.
Lord Byron alive? What utter nonsense. Why, I personally dissected his body only a few hours after his death, hampered by that fanatical Italian Bruno. Full details were published in The Lancet.
But is there the remotest possibility, Dr. Millingen, that Lord Byron survived a treatment and somehow
Contrived to have the post-mortem conducted on a substitute corpse.
I can assure you that in the end our treatment was most thorough. It is true that for a while the imbecile Parry was able to convince Lord Byron to resist expert medical help. That drunken impostor has Lord Byron's death on his conscience. We were only allowed to intercede when it was too late.
So, his lordship did die of an ague contracted in the marshes.
I do not dispute the fever, but in my opinion, it was only a symptom of digestive and circulatory congestion.
And what was your treatment?
I really have no time. Perhaps you would care to observe the treatment of my next patient, a similar case in many respects.
Very well.
Try not to fall over these women folk. They feel compelled to attend to their men. After all, what is a woman in this world if she loses her husband?
Arms, kind sir. Arms!
Oh, away, the crone! Now, as you see, the antimony is being administered. Thus, the contents of the stomach are purged. A large dose of castor oil has already been given to clear the innards. Now, I use my lancet to sever a vein in the wrist. So, 2 or 3 pounds of blood will be removed.
And the leeches?
Hirudinia, the tiny servants of our profession.
Yes, but why are they attached around the brow?
This is a Greek practice I have introduced to the hospital. The blood leaking down the face is intended to evoke the sufferings of our Lord under his crown of thorns.
How barbaric.
Barbs? Yes, the holy barbs.
The patients are deathly grey. What's this gore on his blanket?
The man's wife is a shockingly bad nurse.
I can't believe my eyes, Dr. Millingen. This man's lost a leg. He's dying of blood loss and gangrene.
Hospital is no place for the squeamish, Sir John.
And this is the remedy you accorded Lord Byron.
It is. And I will show you how I dissected him afterwards. And if you will then let me get on with my work.
Oh, my God, the smell.
Now, this chap walked into the hospital unassisted only a few hours ago. Now my assistants are weighing his pancreas on the scales. Lord Byron lay before me, opened up like this, before I sawed him into quarters for shipment in the only leaden casket we could find. His brain, surprisingly enough, was remarkably small.
Really?
And his club foot most pronounced. Telepes equinus, a curled gnarled thing like an outsized prawn. But it was not cloven. There was no hoof, eh? What?
Sir John Hophouse, my lady.
John.
Oh, my dear.
Oh, darling. Now, I found Peter the boatman at the Foreign Office.
Good.
He still has that position of porter that you obtained for him, and he stated most emphatically that Byron caught a chill in the marshes 7 days before he died. Peter was there. It was he rowed him when Byron got caught in a bit of rainstorm.
Yes.
The blackmail letter's a fraud. Byron did die at Missolonghi.
Yes, Bella. Millingen confirmed it, too.
He witnessed the death?
Oh, more than that. He caused it.
Oh?
He's a fanatical bleeder. If Byron had a chance of pulling through, Millingen was the end of it. It's almost as if he was sent to assassinate him by the Turks. It only remains to identify the impostor and get him locked up for life. Then we'll kneel together at the altar and speak the holy vows. Oh, how I long for that day.
It would have to be a civil union, if it ever took place. Now, Dr. Millingen's identification was absolutely positive.
Bella, lay your fears to rest. He showed me how he dissected the body. He even referred to Byron's club foot. Like a prawn, he said it was.
What club foot?
Oh, come, come. You should know better than anybody, darling. It was his lameness. The cause of all his lamentable bitterness against
Byron had no club foot. He was born whole.
What?
The lame foot was not congenital. It was caused in infancy by spotted fever. It was not buckled like a club foot. Only limp and shriveled with atrophy.
Oh, Bella, these are mere details. I'm sure
no Millingen... experienced doctor could be mistaken. Oh, dear, this Millingen must be a charlatan.
Either that, Or there was some monkey business at Missolonghi.
Oh, John.
We'll go and see Fletcher in Whitechapel. He was Byron's valet for 20-odd years. Come along. He'll settle the matter. Is anybody there? Is anybody there?
Is no more spaghetti today. Shop closed.
Are you Zambelli? Lega Zambelli, former bookkeeper to Lord Byron?
Oh, wish to know.
I'm Sir John Cam Hobhouse, here with Lady Byron on business of the utmost urgency. Is Tom Fletcher there?
Open up, Signor Zambelli. I'm here, Sir John.
Good day, my lady. Please enter our very humble enterprise, owed entirely to the generosity of Lord Byron's executors.
Well, it was the least you were owed, but with no detailed will...
Well, his lordship was caught short, ma'am, wasn't he? We all were. Left high and dry in the middle of a bog like that. Still, you've caught up with the lad, I gather. I can think of no other reason for your calling here. You see, Signor Zambelli, I told you they'd go through your accounts with a fine-tooth comb and run across the 50,000 thalers paid to that scamp. I'm right, am I not, Sir John?
Yes, of course, Fletcher. Please give us a full account of what was going on.
Well, as your ladyship knows, we were cooped up behind the walls of Missolonghi under endless rain, surrounded by mad, uncontrollable Greek tribesmen. The British loan was on its way, and they were cutting each other's throats in readiness to seize the loot and make off with it into those gloomy mountains of theirs. And on top of it all, we had a earthquake, and his lordship started having fits again.
Fits, Mr. Fletcher?
Oh, they started in Italy, m'lady. Seizures, palpitations and raving.
Delirium tremens.
His lordship was on a strict diet, m'lady. Dr. Bruno saw to that. It was Captain Parry as did the drinking.
How then do you account for the fits, Fletcher?
Hatred, sir. Apoplectic hatred for everything English. The fits begun soon after he started dealing with the Greek committee in London. And he had his worst turn after they delivered 300 Bibles and no coal for the forges. So... he was cooped up in the house, as I say, a gloomy, oriental hole. And I could see the obsession grasping him, knowing him so well.
You mean a sense of despair in the face of constant reverses? The failure to engage the enemy at Lepanto? The collapse of the Salona Conference?
No, just we've been stuck in the house for months on end. And all the campaigning turned rather, well, how shall I put it?
Academic?
That's it, sir. Why, even the artillerymen upped and went back to England. No, his obsession, sir, was Lucas.
Prince Lucas.
The boy he wrote those shameful poems to.
Lord Byron's pain.
Was wicked the boy. Wanted only Lord Byron's money. He think only of fine clothing and gold.
He was after the money, eh? This could be our man, Bella. So, he extorted a large sum from Lord Byron.
Oh, he didn't have to, Sir John. The boy turned up in Kefalonia and attached himself to his lordship like a limpet.
And the attachment became mutual.
Very mutual, ma'am. Aye, his lordship's manservant was largely relegated to the kitchen to mind the silver, while this heathen upstart lingered in the bedchamber.
He loitered in his lordship's bedroom?
Aye, m'lady. You see, the money chest was under his lordship's bed.
And I, Zambelli, treasurer, had to sit in the kitchen while that sputano peddled his culo upstairs.
It was most galling to Signor Zambelli to have to authorise the payment.
There was a signed approval then. His lordship was compos mentis.
Confined to bed he was, m'lady. They bled him once on the Sunday. I could only glimpse inside the room. Captain Parry had two Swiss guards on the door.
His lordship, then, was already seriously ill.
2 pounds of blood they took on Sunday, ma'am.
Yes, his days were numbered.
He must have been aware of it, sir, and wished to settle something on this boy. Young Lucas come down from the bedroom that evening with a fat bag of gold slung over his shoulder like so much swag, and made poor Signor Zambelli endorse Lord Byron's order there and then. It was written in his lordship's hand. All spidery and helpless. Thus much and more, and yet thou loves me not, it said.
The viper tortured Lord Byron. 50,000 thalers he was paid, and I, Zambelli, was paid niente. Oh, please, sir, hang the boy. Hang him today. Oh, Scusi, I must have some wine.
Yes, it's very steadying, a glass of wine. Do you mind if I...
Oh, please, please, please.
And so, after this regrettable episode, his lordship passed peacefully away?
Not quite, sir. First, there was a salient ultimatum.
They were his lordship's troops.
Oh, aye, milady. 1,000 robbers, intoxicated day and night. They got wind of his lordship's condition, and they were determined to extract their pound of flesh before he died. They sent a delegation to his sickbed next day. The doctors were fighting with Parry to administer quinine water, something his lordship dreaded above all other medicines. The salients come that night. It was a rotten evening, typical of those blighted parts. Pitch black and raining steadily. There was thunder and lightning in the mountains constantly, and a reek of putrefaction coming off the marshes. I watched the delegation from the kitchen, where I had to stay to defend the silver. Each one was draped in reeking goatskins from head to toe. You couldn't tell them from a tent. And you could have got intoxicated just by breathing in their neighbourhood. There must have been 20 of the brutes.
Who received this noisome party?
Surely not Lord Byron in his parlour state.
Oh, no, milady. Young Dr. Bruno was up there, and Captain Parry, who doubtless shared their wine pouches. Of course, I heard him later in the cellars. It's good for stripping paint, that resin wine.
And Signor Zambelli was obliged to sign again.
$5,000, sir.
And all the salients ever did was murder the volunteers, steal goats, and rape the women of the village. Oh, pardon me, milady.
A discredit to their tribe.
And wearing skirts, sir.
Indeed. Well, so after that, his lordship breathed his last.
2 days later, yes, sir. With a prayer for little Ada on his lips.
Very good. I think that settles matters.
You will hang the boy, sir.
We'll track him down, Signor Zambelli. Rest assured you did your duty.
If I may, sir, might I say that... Greece might not be the most natural place to look for young Lucas.
Oh, why is that, Fletcher?
He didn't strike me as being a Greek lad, sir.
Oh?
No, sir. He always lorded it over the Greeks and refused to speak to them. I wondered now and again if it wasn't due to his not speaking the lingo, sir.
Very interesting. I'll bear that in mind, Fletcher.
But whatever happens, sir, wherever you track him down, you'll find the spirit of Lord Byron with him. His lordship loved that young man. No doubt about it. Well, goodbye, my lady. Goodbye, Sir John.
Goodbye, Fletcher. Goodbye, Signor Zambelli.
Oh, this calls for a celebration. My carriage brandy cabinet comes in very handy at moments like this. Here, Bella, drink. You're a widow again.
Oh, John, I wish I could truly believe it. I feel sullied, as though Byron had been prowling about my house.
No, no. It's young Lucas who's been haunting us. No doubt about that now. LB's little lover boy. Obviously, Lucas gambled away the $50,000 he extracted from Byron on his deathbed, and having acquired an appetite for gay living, thinks he'll come back and extort some more.
And the obscure reference to a rash which you thought must have been dug out of the memoirs, well, I suppose he picked it up from Byron.
Yes. It was ever Byron's habit to make fun of me.
But why would he demand the money be delivered to Peru? Why not Canterbury, or at the limit, Calais?
The lad's been lying low among the mercenaries and revolutionists in South America.
Yes. Yes, I think you must be right, John Hobhouse. I will take a sip of that cognac. After all, I feel more like myself again. Let's go to a ball.
Oh, what about a bit of riding first?
Oh, yes, let's go riding, then go dancing.
And what about dining?
Oysters.
And Rhine wine. Oh, wait, I have a better plan. We'll ride and dance and wine and dine all at the same time.
Oh, John, you silly boy, how can we do that? Really? Can you think of nothing else? And hand me, sir. Oh, John, John, John. I don't have my South Sea sponge and vinegar. No, we can.
Damn you, sponge lass. Your resistance merely makes the stallion's urge to master you all the stronger.
Captain, a message.
Oh!
The devil take you, Hatchard. What's this all about?
The seal is unmistakable, milady.
What seal?
An elaborate italic B, milady.
Don't be idiotic, ma'am. That was Lord Byron's seal. Let me see.
I told the messenger there must have been an error, ma'am. Lord Byron is deceased these 2 years, I said, but he gathered the scarf about his face and made off, leaving me holding the letter, and at that moment your carriage came round the corner.
Let me see, John.
Young Lucas has overreached himself this time. Hatchet, take the groom and go out to that messenger. Hurry, man!
Yes, Sir John.
Miss Prism, down where 2 chalky cloud banks roll in silken slopes beneath your eyes, a wanderer on the west side spies beside the peak a slumbering mole. Oh, I must away to Yorkshire to Ada's side.
Why?
Oh, the monster is at hand.
Bella! Bella!
Yes, milady. Throw those dresses in the trunk. We're leaving for Yorkshire this minute. No, 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 wait. What? What? First, go downstairs and tell cook. Now, go on, go. Buck.
Oh. Yes, milady.
Oh. Oh, excuse me, sir.
Be careful, girl. Oh, Bella, hold your horses, woman, for heaven's sake. You're not proposing to dash off up to Holiday Hall just because of a bit of doggerel dreamt up by a wretched Nancy boy, are you? You're a mathematician, lassie. Put 2 and 2 together.
My pistols. I have that pair somewhere. I knew I'd not seen the last of him. It must have been second sight.
How can a nonsensical conundrum affect you so? We've only to identify the messenger. I sent Hatchard after him. Once he's captured, Delavere's men will be on to Lucas's trail by nightfall.
Byron is alive. This message proves it.
Miss Prism. Well, I mean, that's...
That's the mocking name he gave me, because he couldn't bear to think that I possessed a brain, that I might be as clever as he thought himself.
The insulting nickname was notorious at the time. Lucas picked it up.
Oh, 2 chalky cloud banks, Hobhouse. I suppose that conjures up no image in your mind. You who miss not the slightest opportunity to seize and fondle them.
Oh, yes, I...
You know, Hobhouse, for all his foulness, Byron, by his message, shows himself a more perspicacious student of my person than yourself, a lover upon whom at least the details of my intimate geography were not lost.
Down where 2 chalky cloud banks roll in silken slopes beneath your eyes, yes, a wanderer on the west side spies beside the peak a slumbering mole. Well...
Oh. Look one last time on what has been yours, blind fool. But will be no more since you have no recollection of it.
Oh, Bella, your chalky cloudbanks. Yes, Byron always did have a way with a verse. And here's the mole. Oh, darling.
Don't you dare touch me there or anywhere. Leave my room. You are intruding, sir. Oh, that's the front door. Who can it be? Oh, God! He's on the threshold!
Leave it to me, Bella. Leave it to me.
Is it Hatchard? I'll answer it, Mrs. Hatchard.
Yes? What is it? Oh, come on, fellow.
A message, sir, from Colonel the Honourable Lester Stanhope.
Ah, thank you. Ah. Oh. Byron... Denham says conclusive proof that... There, I knew it. Now, wait here, my man.
Sure.
Bella!
I have my pistols ready. Come up and load them, John. I demand that you protect me.
Bella, it's a message from Colonel Stanhope. You know, Byron's feather commander in Greece. He says he has conclusive proof that Byron's dead. Now, come. We must dash down to Surrey. Then at last your mind will be at rest.
Yes, well, word gets round to the club, you know, particularly news from the palace.
Yes.
Well, when I heard that His Majesty had been winched onto his horse for the first time in years, I made a few inquiries. I discovered, to my astonishment, these rumours about Byron raising some kind of army of invasion in Peru, of all places. Well, I thought I could crush the rumours by inviting you both here promptly, ma'am.
So, you witnessed the death and subsequent post-mortem, Colonel Stanhope?
It was my impression you were attending the Solano conference.
Oh, I had been, Hobhouse, but word got through to us in spite of the floods.
I see.
Lord Byron was seriously ill at Missolonghi. Well, I need hardly mention that Byron controlled both his own considerable treasury and our enormous British loan. Well, the conference had been called to discuss these very funds. I mean, they were the Greek budget. Even my printing press in Athens depended on Lord Byron's signature. The conference inevitably collapsed with the news, so I commandeered a constitutional party bombard and sailed full tilt for Missolonghi.
To find Lord Byron dying.
Well, when I arrived, he'd already not spoken for 2 days. He was a ghastly sight.
But recognizable.
Yeah, well, people do not look quite themselves at such a time. He was horribly sallow and barely visible under piles of poorly cured skins. Mm. And they took 2 pounds of blood that afternoon and started administering quinine in desperation.
A lethal medical team.
Dr. Millingen and Dr. Varier swore by the Lancet. I mean, Dr. Bruno opposed them violently at first, then he surrendered and was nowhere to be seen. Pressure on the doctors was enormous, you must remember. For a few days, the whole madness of the Greek War of Independence was focused on that miserable little stronghold. And the volunteers were packing up and going home. I mean, far from laying siege to Lepanto, Byron was under siege in his own headquarters.
So the doctors panicked and bled him to death. Mm.
And where was the British loan in all this, Colonel? Was that too under Lord Byron's belt?
Oh, it was long overdue, ma'am. And that helped matters none.
Indeed. The new nation was without its budget.
Yes, I'd give an arm and a leg to know whether the Admiralty had learned of Byron's dire situation and delayed delivery of the loan from Zante. But lips are sealed on that one. Perhaps merely the name of Byron.
Are you sure you've no axe to grind yourself, Stanhope?
Well, me?
You are a utilitarian who hoped to civilize Greece with a newspaper while Byron landed with a trunk full of uniforms and a pair of Homeric helmets intended to do battle with the Turk. No secret that you two commanders do not see eye to eye.
Well, the greatest good of the greatest number is rarely served by war, Hobhouse. As Jeremy Bentham put it so...
Fine, gentlemen. Have we come all this way to engage in political debate or to establish the fact of Byron's death? Now, what of your promise, Colonel?
Yeah, well, pardon me, madam. Yes, I invited you here to reveal the existence of the first exhibit in my forthcoming Homo Historicus Museum. Please, come this way. Displaying human specimens has hitherto been impossible, but Mr. Benton's recent researches have rendered utterly out of date the garish waxen model purveyed for profit in London by Madame Tussaud.
A concealed door.
Secrecy is vital. The contents of my gallery are priceless, as you will shortly see. Now, please, through here.
A sculpture gallery. Is that a figure under the sheet?
Oh, this is no mere sculpture. Prepare yourselves to see the world's first auto icon. There!
Great heaven.
It's Byron. Draw your pistol, Hobhouse. Defend my honor. Oh, he's immobile. Witchcraft is this?
Prepared in a private laboratory at my own expense, madam. The result of years of work.
This, then, is Byron.
Indeed.
Rather, the body of Byron somehow preserved. The tinted curls, the ghostly pallor, the demonic sneer, the eyes.
It's uncanny. He reaches out as if in greeting.
Oh, not so surprisingly, really. Mr. Bentham incorporated all the latest methods of embalming in his auto-icon scheme. And this, after all, is the body of Lord Byron, painstakingly restored.
Well, Annabella, I think we've laid the ghost at last, even if in an unexpected manner.
I'm not satisfied.
What?
Colonel Stanhope, would you be so good as to remove the figure's right stocking?
The foot. Of course, madam. There. The notorious deformity.
I thought as much. Pull down the breeches, Colonel.
Madam, if there is any doubt in your mind, let me assure you that I purchased the body from Dr. Varier, the Greek surgeon, as soon as I learned that Dr. Millingen intended to butcher it, bury the lungs in Missolonghi, and ship the rest off to Hucknall Torkard. I simply couldn't allow such an opportunity to slip by. I mean, the doctor foresaw no difficulty in finding a cadaver similar enough for the purposes of dissection. I paid him handsomely, thinking only of my service to the world in creating the first ever auto-icon along Bentamite line.
Oh, stop drivelling, man, and do as her ladyship says.
Oh.
She, if anyone, is qualified to identify your revolting dummy.
Very well. even the intimate parts, as you can see, are perfect.
I've seen enough. We're wasting our time here, Hobhouse.
But Lady Byron, you cannot dismiss it out of hand.
Colonel, that hideous object in your gallery may be the first of its kind. I hope it's the last. But if you intend to place a plaque below it marked Lord Byron, Hero of Missolonghi, you will be committing a fraud. Lord Byron was not born with a club foot.
No.
His foot was deformed quite differently by spotted fever in infancy. I do not know who that unfortunate person in there is or was, but he is not my former husband. Now, if you would be so kind as to excuse us.
Byron was notoriously secretive about his deformity. There is a chance that you are mistaken, madam.
If you doubt the evidence of the foot, Colonel Stanhope, then hear the words of a wife. Lord Byron was not in tacto. He was cut like a Jew. Goodbye.
Hard luck, Stanhope.
Water.
We were dangerously close to being deceived. What made you suspicious, Bella?
Oh, the eyes. They didn't have Satan in them.
But the corpse was taken from the deathbed.
Byron must have sent for some kind of doppelganger. He evidently saw the writing on the wall and made off in the night, no doubt, being an expert at such things.
Let's leave for Yorkshire together, Bella. We'll be married in your mother's chapel and take Ada to some unheard-of land like Canada, where LB could never find
us. Oh, no, John, no. I'll never sleep soundly until I have conclusive evidence of Byron's death. And I am convinced he's still alive.
You mean...
Yes, darling. You must go to Peru and do it.
Me?
Delavere will send you. He'll provide counterfeit gold. Only bring me the evidence, John, and then...
We'll be united at last.
Well, we'll see. I'm too distraught to talk about it now. Drive faster, Robin! Use the whip, lad! I'm staying on the terrace for a minute, Ada, darling. A letter's just arrived from Uncle John, all the way to Yorkshire from Peru.
My precious Bella, after a frightful voyage which I endured only with the aid of the captain's liberal stock of navy rum, I was greeted in Callao by Byron's physician, Dr. Francesca Pruna. I had hired a carriage and driven to the palace of the Bishop of Lima, according to Delavere's instructions, but before I could climb out, Bruno had climbed in, poking a pistol into my face, and demanding the gold. When I refused, he fired past my head and made a gaping hole in the rear of the cab.
The next one will blow your royalist head off. Hand over the £100,000.
Where are you taking me? Why, the damned driver's in this with you.
The chest of gold. Where is he?
I will hand it only to Lord Byron himself. You're addressing an envoy of the King of England. Now, take care, young fella.
A box on the King of England, though I know he has one already. Byron will not see you. I am his envoy.
So, you're the extortionist. You're a disgrace to the medical profession, man. Revolutionism? Well, I'm in politics myself. But blackmail? That's blackguardly business. You're a brigand, sir.
And you are a pompous, reformist fool.
Well,
you argue for an extended franchise, but all you really intend is to give the vote to shopkeepers and barrack landlords so that you can fleece them for taxes to pay for the police force you are planning. The better to hound and torture us, freedom fighters.
That's untrue. Every day, every hour that I've been a member of Parliament, I've campaigned unceasingly for total abolition of slavery.
Ha!
That is no mere reform. That is revolution, the legal way.
The slaves you Whigs want to free will come in handy, working for starvation wages in the mines. You are taking over in Peru now that the Spanish masters have been driven out.
Now listen to me.
Your rhetoric is different, but your aims are no different from Disraeli's and his fellow mining speculators. At least they are blatant about their ambitions. You and your reformist windbags want to hide the oligarchy behind a cloud of pseudo-democratic smoke.
Nonsense, I cried, and warming to the debate as ever, found myself, strange to say, offering the blighter a cigar.
Oh, for heaven's sake, Hobbs.
We drove on for hours as the sun went down behind the Cordilleras like a great flaming orange. It took me a while to explain our radical party programme to Bruno and to conquer his scepticism about the forthcoming Great Reform Bill, but in the end he agreed that he was desperately ignorant about the real state of the affairs in the United Kingdom. For him it was simply a question of loyalty to his idol, Byron. He had believed every slander and calumny that the hero of Missolonghi had heaped upon England, blaming her for all his reverses. In return, I got the true story out of this wild-eyed Italian. We stopped somewhere in the desert, and Bruno shot an armadillo, which is an enormous lizard, and toasted it on a spit over the fire.
Here, try a leg. Well braised, it's better than chicken.
Yes.
Contrary to all the stories, everything was proceeding perfectly at Missolonghi, until Byron's syphilis flared up.
Byron's syphilis?
Secondary and starting to look tertiary.
The fits?
Yes, nasty. I was whacking mercury into him during the voyage. But the excitement of the campaign made him susceptible. And it was excitement, not the discouragement and depression they talk about. He was in superb spirits. A fortune in his treasury from selling Newstead Abbey at last, the British loan on its way, and 5,000 Sully troops camped on the hillside, thirsting for Turkish blood. I say, roast lizard upsetting you? You're going a bit green.
Is syphilis not contagious?
Oh, I see. You're afraid your friend, Lady Byron, might have caught it? Probably not. The disease has long dormant periods. Does she show any symptoms?
How would I know?
Oh, come on. Her fortune's 3 times Byron's. You've been trying to breed her for months.
No. She has no symptoms.
Then you've nothing to worry about, Mel. This armadillo's very fine. We should stew one in a bottle of wine.
So, you were engaged in slandering our Greek committee and its devoted efforts.
Ah, yes. Well, we knew that as soon as spring came in and the mountain passes cleared, we could surround Lepanto and give those half-starved Ottoman regulars a whipping which would make the walls of Westminster shake.
And during the battle, Baron would spirit himself away after dressing a mutilated casualty in his uniform. Well, that's an old trick.
That was the plan, but not for the dishonorable reason you infer.
Oh.
Our intention was to score several resounding victories over the Turks, which would inspire the Greeks to forget their quarreling and unify themselves for just long enough to drive the Islamic tyrants out of the Peloponnese. And we were in touch with the Friends of Liberty in Russia. They were well advanced in their plans to overthrow the medieval Romanovs and put Russia at the forefront of European enlightenment, where she belongs. They were to strike in December.
Yes, and look at the results.
Their day will come. Spies in our camp got word to the Tsar.
Yes, and you dreamed that if you topple the Romanovs...
The British aristocracy would tremble and the slaves in your mills would throw off their shackles and rise behind an inspiring leader.
Byron.
President of the Republic of Albion.
Illegally?
Legitimacy stems from the will of the people.
Why then did he make plans to fake his death?
To give a false sense of security to your British rulers. We knew the minute Westminster learned that Byron was to head the insurrection, he would be a marked man. The king's enemies do not last long. Armed in Greece, we felt safe, but a journey to England on a treasonous mission we did not relish. LB had to apparently die, the better to be reborn in glory when he reached an unsuspecting London. That was the plan.
Which got scotched by his attack of syphilis. As a true case of poetic justice.
That imbecile Stanhope gave them their chance. He called in a medical team against my wishes.
Assassins?
Exactly.
Well, Millington's an excellent one.
London may not even have briefed him. Merely to dispatch him was fatal to his patient. But it was when Byron recognized Dr. Vaya that we knew St. James's Palace was onto us.
Why?
They'd already managed to delay the SS Florida with the £800,000 loan.
Well, they had to. Or the British government would have been financing a revolution.
Yes, we had many merry evenings with Byron over that irony. But it went sour when Vaya turned up.
And you say Byron recognized him?
He'd heard of him and glimpsed him during his visit to the Ali Pasha's court. The local Turkish tyrants all have trained murderers in their retinues, and Vaya had raised it to a fine art. Vaya did not expect Byron to recognize him.
You know, I came within an ace of accompanying him to the Pasha's court. So he was poisoned by this villain, eh?
It wasn't necessary. The lancet is a more legitimate weapon of murder. Patients are being bled to death every day with the connivance of their heirs.
But you did allow them to bleed, Baron.
Only once. I needed time to get the substitute from Trelawney.
Trelawney?
He was in the hills with Odysseus and his gang. Huh? Claimed to be training in the arts of brigandry. An absurd adventurer, and just the sort we have to beware of in revolutionary cells. But he came in useful. Even found a chap with a club foot, some Turk or other. I drugged him and left Millinger and Vaya to finish him off. I had to let them bleed the real Byron once to deceive Stanhope.
And it worked. Stanhope fought the body from Vaya.
Stanhope did? Why? How do you know?
Well, I saw it mummified in the most lifelike way at his house.
Hmm?
Oh, some crackpot idea about finding a gallery of living portraits.
Oh, Bentham's mad scheme, adapted from the latest researches in Egyptology. But wait a minute. That must mean that Millingen and Vaya found a second substitute to ship home. Relatively easy for them, since they were going to cut it to bits.
Well, it's no wonder we had difficulty identifying the remains. I just assumed for the time that it was Byron.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible sight. I'd no idea. All this monkey business has been going on at Missolonghi.
And London, and Berlin, and Vienna, and St. Petersburg.
We slept under the stars that night. Then, in the morning, believe it or not, Bruno shot me. Oh. All is lost. He must have examined the equipment Delaverre gave me for preserving the evidence, since I was a trifle late in waking. You know too much, he said.
Far too much, Hobhouse. I cannot allow you to live.
What do you mean?
It is my duty to exterminate you as a class.
But I...
This is not personal. I am a surgeon, and will fire to kill swiftly.
That's no consolation!
I woke up later with a sore chest and something sticky seeping out of my shirt. Do you know what it was, Bella, darling? It was brandy. My flask, the flask you gave me, saved my life. It had been in my jacket pocket, over my heart. There were even a few drops left in the remains of it, which I have no doubt you drank, Hobhouse. Which I drank. But do not despair, my love. I walked back to Lima and will see Bolivar as soon as he returns from Panama. I still have the equipment and my burning resolve to bring you your proof. I live only for our reunion. Your loving John.
Milady?
Yes, Dora, what is it?
A second letter from Sir John, milady.
I cannot bear to read it. You read it to me, Dora.
I'll try, ma'am. Limar, May the 26th.
I think it's Lima, Dora.
Yes, ma'am. Would that be a ship, milady?
No, it's the capital of Peru. Please pass me my smelling salts. It's there, beside my pistols. There.
All right, read on. I write in furious haste. The Bishop of Lima made me wait 3 weeks for an audience. When I was finally admitted, the bishop told me that no interview with Captain Manfred could possibly be arranged because Captain Manfred had been taken hostage by a band of rebel Inca Indians with some grudge against General Bolivar.
Oh, taken hostage? By savages? Oh, now that sounds hopeful.
So I have been frantically busy all day raising a search party. We will set out for Captain Manfred's camp at daybreak. Now I must lie me down in a cold bed, yearning for the touch of your warm skin.
Thank you, Dora. There. How do I look? I'm expecting a most distinguished visitor.
Oh, milady, he's downstairs in your father's library.
Oh! A royal paladin kept waiting.
Oh, sorry, milady. Reading the letter made it slip my mind. Oh, Sir Arthur.
Simply Arthur, star of my life.
King Arthur.
Your knight in shining armor.
My dragon has been seized by savages.
I know. Inca Indians. Oh. They practice human sacrifice. It is the summer solstice today. He's quite possibly having his heart torn out at this very moment by fanatical priests in propitiation of their gods.
Arthur, here, in the library.
But, Father...
Here, against the British history shelves, you send me wild with desire.
Oh, you control everything and everyone, Arthur. Even in Peru.
Blunderer went charging over there so easily.
Oh, Arthur, do not call him the Blunderer.
The Blitherer. The Blabberer. The walrus-moustached brandy barrel.
Oh, he will bring me the evidence.
Not a hope of it. Your only salvation is in my arms. In the protection of the crown of England, at the heart of the rose, where a precious creature such as you belongs. Not in the clutches of a bloated tosspot so consumed with vanity, greed, and imbecility that he dashes off to the ends of the earth at the mere whisper of a royal favor. No doubt he sees himself a peer, an earl, a duke. How pathetically easy it was to ship him off out of my way, the donkey, as if Byron could actually be alive and plotting in the Andes when my man finished him off years ago in the Greek marsh before he could get carried away on any of his grand ambitions. President of Albion, my foot!
Oh, my sponge! What is it?
The second post, milady. Another installment from Sir John, milady.
Thank you, my girl.
Oh, sir. Please read it, Arthur. I am too filled with apprehension. Does he have my evidence? Can I start to live again?
Let me see. Cusco, May the 20th. My darling Bella. Today I obtained the evidence.
The evidence? Oh, you see.
But you only have my word for it.
Read on.
I reached Cusco after a hellish struggle across the Altiplano. From that godforsaken town, I managed to obtain directions to the camp of Captain Manfred. After a further 3 days of difficult riding on bony mules, I came upon the place and was astonished to find there none other than William Parry, our Greek committee artillery officer. The man was in a frightful state.
Halt! Don't move another bloody inch or I'll blow your bloody heads off, man!
I come from Lima with a rescue party. Let me approach. My name's Sir John Hobhouse.
Fire!
By Jove! The man's blown himself up.
It's only a powder burn from a backfire, you bloody idiots. There's two of you are.
Harry!
Arrest that porpoise and clap him in iron.
Unhand me mule, you dogs. I'm an English knight.
Drag him down to the canyon and throw him into the river. Oh, and throw that ruined cannon after him while you're about it.
Ah. Now, listen, Harry. A splash of spirits will cauterize that wound nicely. I have a case of cognac in my baggage.
Silencio! A case of French brandy. Have I died and gone to heaven?
Six magnums, best Napoleon. God, what's that in your breath, Parry?
I've seen those little piggy eyes and that set of ridiculous whiskers somewhere before, haven't I?
Hobhouse, chairman of the Greek committee in 23 and 24. I hired you to accompany our cannon to Greece.
You're one of the fly brains that sent out 300 Bibles in a forge with no coal. I still say we should have burned them. Oh, it's my arms on fire now.
Precisely. I will fetch the remedy.
Fallen on our times then, Sir John, eh? Gambled away the estate, have you? Come looking for a little of the local Eldorado. Can't you English stay at home? The only gold years in the churches, boy. Fancy a crucifix or two.
Right. Here we are.
Ah, God.
Now, put some on a compress for your arm. It'll sting a bit, I'm afraid.
Takes more than a flea bite like that to make a British soldier cry out.
Ow! If you were half a man, Parry, you'd be out in the peaks of a search party looking for Lord Byron instead of languishing here in your cups.
Byron? What's the dog Byron? That's Captain Manfred up there. Byron was left behind in Greece, a martyr to the bloody aristocracy. John! There they are again, those bloody condors! Lord, Just the sight of them makes my bowels turn to water. Quickly, quickly. Dispare, Matraya! Pronto, pronto! Turn their eyes! They won't fire on them. Against their bloody religion.
What's all the commotion about? All I can see out there is a few eagles wheeling against the cliff edge.
They're not eagles, man. Damn, damn, and blast this antediluvian blunderbuss. The grape shot's jammed. No, no, they're not eagles, oh no. Those are condors. And my brave warriors consider them the ghost of Atahualpa, the Inca king, strangled by Pizarro and his invading Spaniards. They won't shoot. They refuse to budge from here at all, man. That's why I'm stuck here helpless. Unable to ride out after Manfred or go to Cusco for help. These blasted condors keep appearing over the mountain. And I can never get a good shot at them. My supplies are running out. And if we're stuck here much longer, they'll be eating us for breakfast. Now you're for it, you scrawny, overgrown kites.
They're out of range, Perry. You're wasting your ammunition. Come along with me and shoot at something worthwhile. An Inca raiding party and their prisoner.
There's more than one white man in their clutches, the dirty devils. They got young and seen Pablo, too.
Oh, Captain Manfred's page.
His aide de camp. They were both out on patrol when the ambush took him.
What the devil is it now?
A condor shadow passed directly over me and sent a shiver up my spine. Oh, it's the curse of Atahualpa, that is, man. The shadow of a condor on your bones. Oh, bless you, John, for your bloody brandy, boy.
Well, come, there's no time to lose if we're to catch up with those Inca raiders. Saddle up, Perry. We'll soon lay eyes on your Captain Manfred, whoever he is.
I confess, I could have ridden no further, Perry. I'm so accustomed to a carriage. Every fiber of my body's torn. It's rough ground for sleeping. It's far too dark to ride any further. Oh. Hard to believe I crossed the Peloponnese with Byron. My thighs are on fire.
Aye. You need a leather arse in this army and a liking for an empty purse.
Shall we make a fire, Perry? Perry?
Oh, well.
We'll get going first thing. Oh. I see how these mountains can infect men's souls. Spirit of Atahualpa. Those condors. Byron seized by Incas. Oh, thank God I have my brandy. Perry, wake up. We're surrounded. We're surrounded.
What? Oh, the bloody savages.
What are you doing?
I'm going to blow a few heads off before they cut my heart out. Still beating, boy, that's what. And chuck over the brandy. I want to die with a taste in my mouth. Oh, my tongue's like a bloody dunghill.
Wait, hold your fire. I've a plan.
Don't try reasoning with them. They'll cut your lips off.
I've a better way. I need the guide. Where is he? Ah, there he is. Come here. Aki, Aki. Now listen.
He's petrified. A petrified Peruvian man.
Look inside this wooden case, my lad. You see that carboy of formaldehyde? That's Captain Manfred's ransom. Riscati de Captain Manfredo. Comprende? Yes. See, Perry, he's nodding.
You're losing control of his neck. He say yes to anything. And they slit your gizzard. Oh, the last bottle of your life tastes by far the best.
Now, I need the chief. Perry, which one do you think's the chief?
The biggest and the ugliest with the best bloody llama. Or perhaps the smallest and the meanest riding on somebody then. if only I'd built a bloody bomb before we left, I could have blown the blinkers to bits, ponchos and all. The way they wait, dear man. Like ghouls looking at corpses.
Yeah. It must be the shaggy one with the huge llama.
I'll blow him off it for you, man.
No, look, he's responding to me. Here he comes. Now, lad, let's see if you're a guide or not. Tell him what's in the case. Rescate.
Capitan Manfredo.
Why is the lad limping about like that, Perry? What's he getting at?
Manfred limps.
Oh, he does he? By cracky it is, Byron. I've got him.
No, you haven't, boy. The Incas have. Here, drink your last.
Oh, very well. No, by God, I won't. I must outfox this mountain tiger.
Capitan Manfredo.
Well done, lad. The chief's looking interested. Now, tell him the formaldehyde's the spirit of Atahualpa, preserved by Pizarro in his palace in Lima. We are returning it as a ransom and a gesture of good faith. Go on. You're doing famously. Yes. Mate Atahualpa. Look, I'll uncork it. So.
Mate Atahualpa.
He's fallen for it. Where to follow? We're on, Perry. Help me cork up this formaldehyde and seal the case.
Quickly, man. Blah, there's an half stinkling. Can you drink it?
Deadly for any man on earth but you, Perry.
Now, what do you mean by that,
The Inca warriors set up a punishing pace, leading us along ledges barely wide enough for a goat, up almost vertical escarpments, down rocky screes, over raging torrents and plunging ravines on rotten logs. Who's there?
Sir Arthur, sir. We've arrested Edward Trelawney in Darlington. We've got him here now.
Trelawney! Byron's corsair! Oh, must we see him?
Every avenue must be explored, Annabella. Duty.
Send him in, Major. Good work, Major. Leave him to me. Well, Trelawney, the parlor pirate. Or are you a barroom brigand these
days? I demand you unlock these manacles and leg irons. Who the devil are you? I'm a Cornish seaman, not a sugar slave.
All in good time, Trelawney. You are acquainted with Lady Noel Byron, I believe.
Ma'am, what do they want with me?
I'll come straight to the point. You have three choices. You may rot in a cell in Botany Bay, or you may tell us the circumstances under which you extorted 50,000 Maria Theresa Thalers from Lord Byron in his extremity at Missolonghi. Come on now, spit it out.
And the third choice?
You may hang yourself. I am a gentleman.
And my crime?
Well, for instance, you were just plotting to blow up England's first railway line at Darlington. You are in league with Luddites.
I was doing no such thing. I was riding on the railway.
You, Trelawney, riding on a railway train?
I intend to have one built at Calcutta, ma'am.
Using my money. My husband's money, I suppose.
I have a partner in the city who considers railways a desirable investment. He provides the capital. I go sweating in here. I demand that you remove these chains.
Not a pirate, a businessman.
So, you have spent my 50,000 thalers on high living. What was it, Trelawney? Slave girls in Antigua? Or at the tables in Venice like Lord Byron?
Come, Annabella. I will question Mr. Trelawney. Account for your movements during the last days of Lord Byron's life. And none of your sailors' yarns, the truth. Your life depends on it.
I was at the Solana conference with Odysseus.
The brigand chief.
He is a cleftish patriot. I sailed to Missolonghi, as did everyone else at the conference. Byron's treasury was the Greek budget. Loan was on its way. Oh, it was a desperate time for Byron to take to his bunk. But he was not simply ill, was he? You know that as well as I do. Assassins have been sent after him. And I think I know now who sent them.
So, Lord Byron was murdered at Missolonghi, and there's not the slightest chance of his being at large.
I did not say that. The doctors were out to suck him dry. There's not a doubt. He recognized the Pasha's poisoner, Vaya, as did Odysseus. Well, it was a fatal mistake not to recognize him. But they failed in their mission.
They failed?
But are you unaware that Lord Byron is buried in the churchyard at Hucknall Torkard?
As far as I know, ma'am, the body lying in that churchyard belongs to a Turkish slave purchased by Odysseus and spirited into Lord Byron's house by a delegation of Sulio warriors.
Look, how exactly did they achieve this spectacular piece of theatrical nonsense?
Strapped around the waist of the tallest man. Concealed under his voluminous goatskin cape. The delegation entered at night, and it was overcast. They also was in no state to spy anything amiss, since most of them were soused.
Including Lord Byron?
He'd been bled that morning and was very weak. He'd lost a lot of weight, too, which made it easier for the Sulio to carry him out. Parry was singing in the cellar, and Fletcher and Zambelli were dead drunk in the kitchen.
And the brother of Lord Byron's mistress?
Count Gamba.
He was duped by this pantomime?
Well, Dr. Bruno sent him away on some pretext. The exchange was made during the supposed conference.
So I presume he died while in your custody, and you're loath to admit it.
Not at all. The cat's out of the bag, or I wouldn't be here chained hand and foot.
Are you suggesting that Lord Byron did escape from Greece?
He escaped from assassination at the hands of the British government and lived on to fight for liberty.
Treason.
Really my opinion. But I'll not be here long to trouble you. I sail for Calcutta in 2 weeks' time.
And Lord Byron's health in no way declined?
On the contrary, ma'am. Unless an accident befell him after I navigated him from Patras to Tripoli.
You claim to have done this with his lordship alone?
Prince Lukash and Captain Parry were along.
And Bruno?
Well, he had affairs in England to attend to.
Extortion.
So, Trelawney, the question remains. What have you done with the 50,000 thalers you extracted from Lord Byron?
Ask Odysseus what became of it. I expect he added it to the cleftish treasury.
Oh, I can listen to your tiresome cant no longer, sir. You can leave for Calcutta on the next ship. Have this man removed.
Will they take me back to Darlington and sew up my ruined coat?
No, nor will they repair your punctured vanity. Oh, one thing more, Trelawney.
Yes?
I don't suppose you've heard from Lord Byron, have you?
No, I haven't. But I can see that you have, whoever you are. You tighten up your halyards. You're luffing in the change of history's wind. You'll soon be awash.
Oh, Arthur, how can you let him go? He's Byron's evil spirit. Oh, lock him away in the tower. Let him rot.
We have nothing more to fear from Byron, beloved. Even if he did get away from Greece, and I don't believe a word of Trelawney's bragging, the walrus vows he's sewn things up in Lima.
Oh, yes, yes, the evidence. Oh, now, where were we?
Ah, yes, let me see. At last we stood before a dismal crag which reared out of the valley with condors wheeling round its summit. The Inca chief identified it as Machu Picchu, their sacred hideout. Parry had a kind of apoplexy, and I was obliged to strap him over his llama for the arduous climb.
Obos! Obos!
Parry, you come back to life. Can't you open your eyes?
Never could bear being up aloft. Used to puke my guts out in the crow's nest. Oh, steady me with a taste of brandy.
Well, don't look down then. We're reaching the top.
Oh, what's there? A fortress teetering on the bloody brink, I suppose. Oh, bring up the bottle, John boy.
No, it's a kind of village built of the most enormous stone.
It's all get lie.
And down at the end of the common, there's a promenade with ladies in white gowns. I think they're gathered round a perambulator.
Good God! We've died and gone to Brighton.
No, wait a minute. It's not a promenade. I think it's an altar of some kind.
and rows of priests in white robes gathered round it. The terrace is built on the very edge of the precipice, hanging over an abyss. What an awesome sight.
Oh, stop, man. It's worse than looking. Oh, where's that brandy?
Now they're raising the host towards the condors who are reeling overhead. Oh, dear. How very unsavory.
What is it? Speak, man. A bouse. Oh, God, where's the brandy? Oh, bouse.
It's a human sacrifice.
There must be a reed in the entrail.
My God, some of them are coming this way.
Oh, get out the bottle, man. I want to be too far gone to feel the knife.
You're right.
Oh, oh, thank God, man.
Unhand me, you blighters!
It's all right, man. They're going to throw us in a lovely dark cell where we can't be tortured by the view. Don't worry, I've still got the bottle.
Oh, Bones.
Yes.
Have you got your eyes open?
I think so, yes. Yes, I have.
I think I'd prefer the view after all. Oh, there's still a pint of brandy left. Hey, what's that? There must be another sacrificial lamb in here.
Lucas? My God. It's Prince Lucas Bolivar, son of His Excellency the Emperor Peru. For that is your true identity, is it not?
Were you men with my father?
Loyal officers, we still are. And planning to effect an exchange for Lord Byron's life. We'll ride out of here within the hour. I am an English knight. The Inca warriors will acknowledge my prestige immediately.
That is Parry, I swear.
He is vowed not to feel the pain of a knife.
They are cutting Captain Manfred now.
Oh, God.
Why must the good men die?
I admire your loyalty, lad. But take courage. I think as you grow up, you'll understand that Byron, romantic poetry, and a dream of classical Greece have no place in the modern world. March of Industry is going to change things beyond recognition. Byron, Shelley, Blake, a lot of them. The voices from the past.
Traitor!
He's an Englishman.
If England is allowed to incubate the industrial plague, the whole face of the earth will catch it and turn into a festering mass of sores and poisons. Stokers and mechanics, slave masters and clerical tyrants will roll their machinery of destruction over the soft, green world. The pestilence must be crushed in London, Manchester, Stockport, Darlington, wherever its cankers are breaking out. That's where we'll make true revolution, not parliamentary reforms dreamed up to help the engineers construct their empire of the living dead.
Now I know it's Byron on that altar. Rave on, laddie. I'll soon have the evidence.
We'll have nakedness and dancing in the streets of London. Wild vines and creepers smothering the model factories. Eleusinian mysteries where the schoolrooms stand. All the citizens of Albion singing as they harvest. Their anthem, Blake's Jerusalem. Ecstatic children of the earth and sun. No fathers, no married slaves, and an end to so-called learning, books, and pettifogging life of the mind. Life in the mind.
You and Byron have been dreaming of a bloodbath. Oh, my God, they've come to get us.
A bloody condor snatched the corpse.
The soul of Manfred lives. See how it soars in the shadow of a condor. Up, up above the mountain tops.
Look, Harry, look on the altar. The severed foot. Me evidence. The king will keep you in luxury if you grab it for me while I get the cowboy. Think of it, man. Rivers of brandy for life.
I'll save it for Manfred's sake. not for yours.
Have the bands, Red Bella. Order the cake, my little duckling. We're on our way to the altar. I'll buy a vineyard in Oporto. No, a chateau in Cognac country. Why not both? We have a palazzo in Venice, a mansion on Regent Street. I've found 100 factories, dig a canal across England. How about a mountain range named after myself where I can write my memoirs undisturbed?
Yeah, I've got a foot, but they see me take even.
Oh, good show, Paddy. You've just earned yourself a pension. Ah, that's the foot, withered by spotted fever. Poor Byron, I wouldn't have wished that end on him. Right, now we've got the evidence, we'll drop it in the carboy. It's here, on the mule. Now, grab a llama, man, and run for your life.
I'll take the brandy-colored llama.
Stop! 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 I know you! You're Hobhouse, the liberal we blackmailed. Byron's foot won't be your rotten fortune.
I'll take that carboy.
Give me back the evidence. Harry! Watch out for the cliff! Harry! Harry!
You destroy everything! Now you destroyed a brave munitions officer! I'll strangle you with my bare hands!
Then drop that cowboy, Lucas, I beg you! His Majesty will pay anything, an earldom, a duchy! Let's not arrange! If you go over, my future goes with you! Duck, Lucas!
Harry and Lucas! Both me witnesses over the cliff. And me evidence shattered. Come, you savages. Tear me apart and read the ruin in the entrails.
And I almost did throw myself onto their mercy. But at the last moment I took flight down the saddle track and found my way to Cusco. I leave for England as soon as my arrow wounds heal. Your faithful servant, Hobhouse. Oh. Well, that's the end of Byron, Bella. He's at the bottom of a Peruvian abyss. And you are warm, palpable. And
Hobhouse is on his way.
Oh. Yes. Well, somebody's been trying to sell me Byron's unexpurgated memoirs.
Hobhouse destroyed them months ago. There must have been a copy.
Exactly. And tracking it down will keep the walrus out of our hair.
Oh, Arthur, you are superb.
Yes, I am rather, aren't I?
In Lord Byron's Last Command by Roland Morgan, Sir John Hobhouse was played by John Rye, and Annabella, Lady Noel Byron, by Elizabeth Morgan. Sir Arthur Delavere, Stephen Thorne. Dr. Julius Millingen, David Sinclair. Thomas Fletcher, John Hollis. Liga Zambelli, Arnold Diamond. And Colonel Stanhope, Garard Green. Edward Trelawney, Alan Thompson. Dr. Francesco Bruno, Sean Barrett. William Parry, Johan Meredith. Prince Lukas, Mark Straker. And Dora, Lucinda Smith. The play was directed by Jerry Jones.